sugya. This is one of the most potentially ramifications of halacha sugya. That's what we spent a lot of time talking about, a sugya that isn't so lemaisa, but now we're going to move into something that is very, very much lemaisa. It's the background of the sugyas of damaka. Damaka, when a woman is finding blood, and you're trying to figure out a way to possibly attribute that blood to some other cause, she has some kind of a maka. So we have to tackle the sugya really on many, many different levels. There's a lot of rumdus in the sugya in terms of sfeikus, many of the rules, many of the principles of sfeikus in other areas of halacha, sfeik, and some of the eisel chumras and chazakas and sfeikus, and some of those principles begin to play out here as well. And then there's definitely a certain degree of metzias that has to be understood. And then we have to try to figure out how modern day medicine affects some of the things that we're talking about. And we have a little bit more clarity, perhaps, at least in terms of metzias. By less clarity in terms of halacha, more clarity in terms of metzias, and trying to figure out how to put that picture together. It's a very important sugya, fairly complicated sugya, but a very, very important sugya, the halacha. So we'll begin on page 14 of the Maamar Kavos. When the Gemara begins to discuss the sugya of damacha, we could suspect that the blood may be coming from some other area. So the Gemara actually begins the discussion in the middle of a very, very strange scenario in Hilchos Nida. It's an area that Bizman Hazeh, I wouldn't say almost never happens, I would say never happens, never say never, but something that's not very real in terms of Lumaisa. We'll just see it in the context of the sugya because that's where Damaka is introduced. So the sugya begins on the top of page 14, the Gemara Maseches Nida Nasimachem Veis Tan Rabbanon. Harod Damaka was Tashmish. If a woman sees blood in the context of having relations, and that's not so crazy, that type of does happen, but the way the Gemara is going to describe it, doesn't happen. The Rod Damachas Tashrish. A woman sees blood because of having relations. Mishamesh as Pam Rishona. It happened one time. Ushniya. Second time. Ushlishes. It happened three times. So something happening three times in halacha we know is cause for concern. That we, if it happened three times, then we assume that some kind of a chazak has been established and is going to continue to happen. The kind of Eilach, the Brisa starts happening low to Shabbat. She can't have relations anymore. Achit Tiskarish. She has to get divorced. Now, again, the Roa Damachas Tashmish does happen, as Mount Zed is, it's common, but there are shadows that happen with Roa Damachas Tashmish, but that she gets to the point where it happened three times, we thought to get divorced, that never happens. The reason why that never happens, as Gemara is about to say, is that if you can attribute the blood to some other source besides regular uterine bleeding, that's going to save her from this consequences of being what we call an Alacha Roa Damachas Tashmish. But again, first the Brisa starts out with the worst case scenario. In case the Maisa doesn't happen, 1 through 3, and that's it. And she has to get divorced, and she has to, and then she can go marry somebody else. But also the Achim. Why is she permitted to marry somebody else? Why don't we assume that, well, she's already have a chazoka, and she sees blood, how can she marry anybody? The Gemara explains a little bit later that just because there's a chazoka, that relations with this man is somehow triggering Tashmish, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to trigger Tashmish with somebody else. So she doesn't have a clear cut, the chazaka, vis-a-vis other people, so we will permit her to remarry. These says the Achim. One of the same story happens. So she marries somebody else. Rasa Damachash Tashmish, again, the same Pizma. Shemesh is Parmishadish Nishlishis, but you can't bail about the Shamish. But if she creates a chazaka to a separate man, then also she can no longer remain married to him. Achit Tiskarish, the Tinaz of the Achim. Until she gets divorced and she marries somebody else. Nisis the Acher. It happened the third time around. Rosa Damachas Tashmish. Mishamesh is Pav Rishon Shnir Shlishis. Mikar Melechot Tishamish. Then, if it happens already three times, not only is she in trouble, she's in serious trouble, because now she's created a chazoka that every man under the sun is causing her this problem. So what does she have to do? Lot Tishamish Ashi Tivtuk Atzma. Then she has to check herself. How in the world is she going to check herself? So the Lord gives you a very intricate, detailed method of checking, obviously something that would not be advised that we've done, Bizman Hazeh. The Gemara describes how you basically put something inside to almost mimic Tashmish and try to see where the source of the blood is coming from. So again, we're going to leave out the medical part of the sugya. We're going to move on to it's three lines from the bottom where the sugya really, really begins, the apparatuses. So three lines from the bottom, Gemara says, V'in yesh la maka ba'osamakom tol b'makasa. That's going to be the breathing sigh of relief, as well as that. If she has a maka in that area, So she can be told, or she can assume that the blood is probably coming from the malchut, which is basically every time it happens today. A woman bleeds during relations, so the first thing we do is send it to the doctor. The doctor takes one look, and he'll tell you that her cervix is irritated. He'll tell her that she has an infection, she has irritation, she has something, and that's inevitably being aggravated by the tashmish. Sure, so we'll just call it a day, and we'll forget the sugya of Rodalfa's tashmish. But the Gemara did tell us that there's a principle called Tola B'Macha. So she, otherwise we would be concerned. Otherwise we would say she's a problem. But because she has a Macha, she could be Tola B'Macha. So she can assume that the blood is coming from a wound. Then the Braisa continues, Vim Yeshla Vestas Tola B'Vesta. Vestas means a normal cycle of bleeding. So she has a cycle, she could be Tola B'Vestas. Now, we have no idea what that means. We got a long way to go till we figure out what that line means in the context of Macha. And then, skip down a little bit, two lines from the bottom. Now, how in the world did we ascertain that she has a macha in the first place? The Braisa starts off by saying, well, she has a macha. We told her she has a macha. She knows. So the Gemara says that she is believed to say, if she tells us she has a macha, then she has a macha. How does she know she has a macha? So she's not seeing that she has a macha. There must be some other way, the feeling, she's used to that kind of feeling, where the other women are explaining to her that these kinds of sensations that she's having are usually synonymous with machos. So she has some kind of an emunah to say that she has a macha in the macha, she remembered dam yaitzei. So basically we have really three halachas now that are relevant for us. First of all is this whole notion of a raw dam machos tashmish, that it's a potentially loaded topic, because if treated incorrectly, it's not a gemara at least, it could end up with the disastrous consequences of potentially having to get divorced, or potentially maybe not even being able to marry anybody, depending on how many times it occurs. So the consequences of the Rodam Chazashas are very, very severe. But the practical application is much less. But the two points that are most important for us was the point of one, that the Makkah will help her, in a sense. The Nesh Makkah, that's going to save her. And number two, she's Nemenes to say that there's a Makkah, and she can identify, in a sense, that she has a macha yeshli b'mocha. So before we get into the nitty-gritty as to how do we figure out precisely what kind of a macha we're dealing with, we have to ask ourselves, location-wise, biologically-wise, where exactly is this macha? This macha that's being described is going to save the province, going to save the world. Where exactly is the macha? So obviously, if she has a macha that's not in the uterus, if she has a problem external, she has a macha in the vaginal area, so obviously that's going to be okay. That's not dam nidus, even though it's technically coming out of the same opening of the body, but that's not dam nidus. Dam nidus is something that comes from the uterus. So that's poshut. That's like beyond discussion. But of course, dam that's coming from a macha is almost like an external, it's internal inside, it's inside the body, but it's external vis-a-vis the uterus. That's like nothing to discuss. But what if the macha is a little bit further in? What if she has a macha inside the uterus? So the Gemara says it's also okay. Macha yeshli b'mokar. She has a macha inside the uterus itself. So the Gemara says that that's also okay. So that's very, very tricky. What exactly that line means? Macha yeshli b'mokar. The macha in the uterus itself would be permissible. So it's a very, very doctor's question, a very, very fine line question, which could have very, very serious ramifications on halacha. What exactly constitutes a macha sheyeshli b'mochor? How do you define the phrase macha sheyeshli b'mochor? So there are two comments of the Chazon Ish. One of them I put on the Maamar Kamos, and then there's another one which is a letter that was written by the Chazon Ish. I was hemming and wondering whether I should print out. I have copied the letter. I was hemming and wondering whether to print it out. It's very difficult to understand the nuances of what the Chazon Ish meant, but I'll try to present outside what the picture is in terms of what this macha sheyeshli b'mochor is all about. So the Chazon Ish, in the second of the Maamar Kamos, the Chazon Ish begins to describe different scenarios of what is considered to be potentially this macha sheyeshli b'mochor. Let's take a look. So the Chazon Ish, it's about six lines or so from the bottom. The Ein Lomar, the Nido Dindon, the case that he was talking about, Gorat Fei, the scenario that he was discussing, maybe is more of a problem. What came in the Dam Avesis over Derech Ababua, the Inkam Damakwa Eladam Nido. He says that, instance, sometimes you reach the point where you're not quite sure, are we describing a mapa, or are we describing damnidus? The problem is that it's coming from the identical same place. To put it into modern day language, again, if I say anything medically wrong, Dr. Fisher, please correct me. To put it into modern day terminology, so it's an endometrial lining that's bleeding. We know it. We're not guessing, we're not approximating, we're taking a look and we're seeing that the source of the blood is coming from something in the lining, and that lining is the same exact lining that sheds when the woman gets a period. So could we say, wait a second, that's not a vodka? Now, even though this is not our regular cycle, it's not a regular time for a period, there's bleeding that's coming from the endometrial lining, so should we take a step back and say, wait a second, endometrial bleeding is not damakra. He called it damakra. He says, that's the blood, that's the damnidus. He says, alkein ze'enu. He says, that can't be true. Diemkein nafla tyrus makra bebira. He says, if you're going to say that any time you see blood from the endometrial lining, that's automatic damnidus, so what does the Gemara mean by damakra? The Gemara says, damakra shebemokar is tar. The duba damnidus over derech hamakra. He says, then the whole thing doesn't make any sense. The Gemara speaks about a makkah being okay, and you're going to tell me, no, the makkah is not okay because maybe that damnidus also is damnidus. V'lo somchen al isha shemageshes b'makkah, v'lo amrichacham lachkor b'rofim im damnidus over derech ha-makkah, alavade kol she'a orek patsua umuka ein derech ha-riyah b'kachu tahora. Says the Chazidish, so the answer is, what's the difference? How do you know whether something is called damnidus or damnachah? So the answer is, orek, like the blood vessels, is patsua. And there's a cut. When there's some kind of a cut that's there, that's causing the bleeding. So damnidus, says the Chazanish, is when the endometrial lining is almost shedding by itself. Damnachah is when it's the same blood vessels, the same source, the same part of the body, but the blood is being inflicted by some kind of a cut. That's considered to be halachli damnachah. That's what the Chazanish in the Sefer seems to define the difference.
You're still left with the same question. How do you know the difference?
So the answer is that kolzman that you know that there's a cut there, that's the source of the bleeding, that's automatically called damakha. And you don't have to start making cheshbonis. Well, maybe she's getting a period also. That's not a... If you know that there's a cut there that's bleeding, that's called damakha. So we'll give just a modern day application. What would this mean practically? So let's say we made the cut there. We know we made the cut there. The doctor made the cut. Let's say, for example, a woman goes for a procedure that involves some kind of an incision, some kind of a cutting into the endometrial lining. So we'll call it, endometrial biopsy. A woman goes in to get something done into the endometrial lining. So some kind of instrument that's put in. The fact that the instrument was inserted, that was something we spoke a lot about in previous weeks. Is that called a psichas ha-mokor? We said most of the time not for a variety of reasons. But tachlis, the doctor goes in, puts in an instrument, starts to scrape away, cut away, and it takes it out, and there's bleeding. There's a lot of bleeding. So what's our status? So the Chazon Ish in the Sefer writes, that's okay. That's exactly what the Gemara says. That's Yadua Ishashiyesh. This is better than Yadua. In the days of the Gemara, the woman was just hoping that she thinks that she knows she has a mafa. Here, the doctor's telling you, I'm telling you, again, whether he's a from doctor or not from doctor, we'll talk about that later, what nemanos the doctor has. But assuming that we have proper credibility, so he's telling you that this woman is bleeding from the endometrial lining, but I know for a fact that I made the cut in the lining, so according to this comment of the Chazon Ish, it should be okay. The problem is that there's another comment of the Chazon Ish, which is a little bit less clear. There was a conversation, a correspondence really, that took place between the Chazon Ish and one of the doctors in Shari Tzedek. Was back in the 1940s. I'm going to get the letter just for a second. I'm going to try to read it through a little bit. Between the Chazon Ish and Dr. Moshe Taub, from who was the, he was the, I think he was in Shari Tzedek, if I'm not mistaken. It's not in the Sefer Chazon Ish, it was reprinted in the diary of the, about the Chazon Ish. Agrafi ben Chazanish, there's an old story about the Chazanish pressing him to try to define certain nekudos of Chazanish needed properly. And in here, the Chazanish has a very, very unclear description of something. He speaks about Dam Abomach Veseret Be'or HaRechem Shebitz Putz Adam Vaba Ofen Shebaba Petza B'Sher HaGuf. So, depending on how you read a couple of lines in this Chazanish, so there are those who suggest that what the Chazanish is saying in the letter is a little bit different than what he's saying in the Sefer. The Chazanish is saying somewhere along the lines of the following, that Makkah doesn't mean it's coming from the same exact place, doesn't mean that it's coming from the same lining. When Chazal describe a Makkah, they're describing something else. They're describing some other bleeding that's not literally the Makkah of Dam Didus. Anything that's coming from the lining itself, whether the lining is shedding naturally, whether the lining is being scraped upon, that automatically is considered Dam Didus. Almost the opposite of what it says in the Sefer. If that's the case, then what is the Dam Makkah that Chazal is describing? And again, remember we saw from the Gemara that Dam Makkah is not only the Makkah which is external, but a Makkah even B'Mokbar. Chazal do describe a Makkah in the uterus itself. So that's the multi-million dollar question. According to this second version of the Chazanish, that anything that comes through endometrium is a problem. It's automatically considered to be Dam Nidus. So what is the Makkah Shebimokbar? So I thought that one could suggest that there's a throwback to what we spoke a little bit about last week. Remember, last week we spoke about what exactly the halachic status of the cervix is. Remember, we spoke over Shlomo Zalman's cool back and forth about where the cervix fits into this picture. According to some poskim, the cervix is technically part of the mochar, but the cervix doesn't have lining to it. There's no endometrial lining in the cervix. The lining is only in the uterus proper. So if you hold that the cervix is halachically the mochar, so to speak, but it doesn't share the regular damnidus, so then we understand full well what the makkah shel mochar is. Well, makkah shel mochar is another way we would say today is cervical bleeding, not uterine bleeding. So if that's correct, we just said that all uterine bleeding is by definition damnidus, it doesn't matter what caused it. The only makkahs that Chazal were referring to were either from the outside of the gamre, or cervical bleeding is considered to be that makkah because there is no lining there. That's a whole different ballgame in terms of the chesnida. But that would translate to mean is that any procedure that's done in the uterus, whether it was scraping, biopsy, that doesn't matter. If anything touches the endometrial lining, that's a problem. That's automatically considered to be a cheshash of nidus. So this is a big machlekes poskim ad hayom hazeh, how to poskim these kinds of shahs. So some poskim who follow what it says in the Chazanish in the Sefer, others on the way, who say that I don't care where the blood comes from, it can come from the endometrial lining, it can come from that, it doesn't matter. If at the end of the day it came about through a scraping, through a cutting or something, that's okay. That's fine. And there are others who say, no, if it's endometrial blood, we're nervous about that. If it's cervical blood, then it's okay.
I don't know if this is more of a cloud of how you want with Paskin, but this correspondence, this was a private correspondence with him and the doctor. I mean, when was it published before he actually...
I don't know.
How does one rely on private correspondence?
It's hard to know. It's hard to know. I can't tell you for certain. Where did they get this from? who found this letter?
It's in Tachlis. This is what's in the Sefer, as opposed
Right. This was printed in Chtavah Shal Chazanish. Yeah. So Dr. Moshe Taub. I can't tell you who put it out. I don't know.
There are other postcards that have the same feeling.
Well, a lot of the discussion is revolving around this Chazanish. That's the problem. A lot of stuff around what the Chazanish is. It's not 100% clear. I don't understand what he said in the letters, and I don't understand. Go ahead, Pascal. To make matters even more complicated is that even the Chazanish himself discusses sometimes you can have bleeding that's endometrial bleeding, and even a niyach that we want to be making, even a niyach that we'll go with the more lenient version. So that may only be true if the bleeding is brought about by a real incision. Remember that lashon Chazanish, it's like patsua. There was a cut that was there. Sometimes the bleeding can come about not so much through a cut, and come about almost through kind of, Chazanish describes as pressure. There used to be a test that they used to do, they don't do it anymore, but they used to test in the olden days when the tubes were blocked and up. Now, the way they test when the fallopian tubes are blocked, and the woman, whatever, she's ovulating, but reminds the eggs not coming down anywhere. So what they used to do is, they used to shoot air into the into our body, and there was a way to test to figure out whether it went through into the tubes. Now they do dyes and then check with other kinds of coenzyme. But in the old days, they used to do it with air. So that was part of this discussion that Chazanish asked Dr. Taub. He says, the original shadow was Meshvilim Shel Arechav Sherof Menachim Lefoscham. He said that the doctors are shooting air into the tubes. B'mikveshim atumim im derech osim hashvilim zorim mayim gam damaveses olo. So he says that he's asking Dr. Taub, does that air test bring about blood? And then he says umay yasiba, and what's the reason for that blood? Shapu'ula shal nafichim etavtev dam. This is Chazanish's words. Im zo b'shvil seret ba'or o b'shvil psichas peshal echad hashririm hanovei dam. Is the bleeding caused by a cut? Is the bleeding caused by something else? Imashrim ha'elu menazim gam damveses. Is the period blood also coming out at the same time? That was the give and take. That was the original give and take of Chazanish and this Dr. Tal. Again, at the end of the day, there are different opinions in Poskim. There are some who are making on the Shaila and will just let all the endometrial testing and all that kind of stuff just go by and say, it's all done. And others are more weary about this. The modern day application of this, one of the common modern day application is the test that's done today. It's usually part of an infertility workup when to test whether the tubes are blocked or not, is they do it called the dye tests. I cannot even begin to pronounce the dye test. It's HSG, maybe you can help me with this one. Histopinga something or other.
Histrocelpinga. Something else. So
yeah.
Pingo is the
uterus,
and
Selpingo
is the
fallopian tube. So it's a histopingo something or other, a gram. Okay. So tachas have a gelamaisa of is that it's shooting a dye into the tubes, and then they check it on the screen to see what's going on in terms of blockages. So the shaila is, does that test make a woman into a nida? That's a very, very common shaila. So that test usually does bring about bleeding. The question is, where is the source of that bleeding? So the problem with that test is multifaceted, because some of the bleeding is probably cervical bleeding, so that in and of itself would be okay. Some of the bleeding is probably uterine bleeding, but even when it's uterine bleeding, it's not clear what's causing that bleeding. Is the bleeding caused because there's no real cut that's in there? It's almost more of a pressure that's causing the bleeding. So that may be a problem, even according to the Chazanish, even according to the cooler version of the Chazanish. Because remember, the Chazanish described that, well, bleeding that's coming from the lining is okay because it's derech a cut. What if the bleeding coming from the lining is done because of some kind of a pressure? So that the Chazanish doesn't talk about it. He does talk about that a little bit more, the chumra. So there are different opinions in the Poskim about that test. That's a very common shaila, because that particular test that you would think, what's the big deal? Why doesn't she get the test when she's a surah? That would make life so much easier. The problem is that particular test is usually done at a very specific time in a cycle. It's usually done between day 5 and day 10 in her cycle, which is usually in the middle of Shemitah Kiyum. So that's usually the worst time, halachically, for a test to be done. So this is the common chances. Every once in a while, you have a woman who's it becomes very stressful, because the only women who are going for those tests are the women who are having trouble becoming pregnant. So then you tell her she's going for a test, and by the way, that's going to cost you this month also, because you can't go to the mikveh until you finish the shiur and came in this test. So again, I'll relate a story. I'm not a rebbe. Those who know my personality, it's not exactly my mahalach. But my sister, there was a couple who called me. They were having trouble having children, and they had to go for this test. And then they were pressing me. They wanted to know, so Tafas, what's the status? And I need to not need the after this test. I said to him, listen, I said, you know, the sorrow that I have is that sometimes this causes a problem depending on how much blood there is, the cast in her ears. I said, this could be a problem. I said, it's a potential problem. I said, the people who called me, it wasn't my Talmud, it wasn't somebody from the community here, it was someone I dealt with a little bit over the years. I said to him, listen, I said, this is a big controversy in the contemporary poskim, what the exact outcome of this test is. Rabbi Forster, he said that as a footnote, yo big, and at the end of the footnote he says, basically, ask your Rav what you think about this, the results of this test. So I said, listen, you're not like, you don't call me all the time for everything, when I have a relationship with you, I won't be hopefully insulted. You want to ask another Rav? Can you ask another Rav? Maybe someone will be more maker for you. So I remember the husband said to me, he said, no, listen, we call you with our shadows and listening to it. If you tell me that it's a problem, it's a suffering problem, it's a homework, well, we're klal. So I said, lefini is da'ite. I think it's better that to treat it as being aser. A serious shayla, maybe shayla deraisa even possibly. So I said, I think it's better to be machmir the shayla. You lose the month, and we'll hope and pray. I'll give you a bracha. It should be matzliach, whatever it is. Unless you became pregnant the next month. Okay, I'm not a rebbe. I'm not a white face, but okay. Did you give a bracha? Brachas hedyu. Hopefully, brachas hedyu comes in. Okay. Anyway.
Is the whole nekudas hamachlokes on endometrial bleeding, what is the source of tumas nida? Because I always thought that tumas nida is because there was potential for life, and now you've taken away life. So whenever we take away life, i.e. death, there's tumor. But here, when a doctor does a procedure in the middle of the month, so we know it has nothing to do with potential for life, right. It's just that it came from there. So why would you say that there's tumor now?
Right, so the problem is that we're crossing that fine line between you know, machshava, tamah mitzvah, and halacha. The halacha is clear. Let's say, leaving out the doctor, let's say in the middle of the month, the woman has some kind of, she's on pills or something, and of course it's a mid-cycle bleeding, and she has a real re or something. Now, we know that she didn't, this is not what you call the termination of life, this has nothing to do with a regular cycle, but it was bleeding, and there's no makom, we know exactly where it came from, so there's no question that's needed there, right? No shall about it. It doesn't fit into the picture of what you're saying. It's true. We find that a lot in Tamei Mitzvahs, that, you know, I always say that in Orat Torah, we can appreciate it, it's the difference between the Shabbos morning drasha and the Shal Shudas Shia. In some shuls, you can't say that, because many shuls, Shal Shudas is more drasha than Shabbos morning. But in that shul, so the afternoon shir is a Shia, and the morning is a drasha. So the bottom line is, even though we know it has nothing to do with life, but it's still considered to be a problem. Anyway, so get back to the story. So now that we have, I can't say absolute clarity, now we have less clarity than when we started, but we move on to the next question of putting aside the modern techniques today. Let's go back to the Gemara itself. The Gemara said that if there's a maka, whatever that maka is, we'll call it a maka, the surya, if there's a maka there, so then we're okay. What type of a maka are we referring to exactly? I mean, how much do we know about this maka before we're willing to be making on it? So let's take a look at the third of the Maram Kamas, in the Rashba, in the third Sabai. So the Rashba is a very important comment about the degree of this maka. Mistavra, it would appear to me to make sense. The afilu einem argeshes mamish shadam shoseis v'yori min amakla. So says the Rashba, the woman comes and says, listen, I'm having some blood, but I'm telling you I have a makla. So what's the rabbi's next question? The rabbi's next question is, well, do you know for a fact it's bleeding right now? You can feel the bleeding right now? He says, come on, says the Rashba. It's unlikely that that's the next criteria that has to be met. Why? Chada. The ein einea vein makosa. He says, how does she know that it's bleeding now? She knows there's blood coming out of her body, but that's what we're trying to figure out. Is the blood coming from the maka? How is she going to say with a straight face that I see the blood coming from the maka? The EF Shalalega, the only way she's going to know, El Rabika Shvaferes, that's the checking that the Gemara talks about, that the part of the Gemara that we left out before. We skip down for a minute. Vasa Mashmavada, the Beruah Delphus Maka, ain't it Tzvich Shvaferes? So he gives you a whole Ryan why it can't be that. So what is it exactly? So what exactly is this maka? So let's take a look if we can get it. So we take a look at the second column in this Rashba. So he says that the kind of menes loma maka yesh l'shem imena hadam shoseis v'yoreid. Lavna menes loma shemena shoseis v'yoreid. The Gemara says she's believed to say she has a maka that's bleeding. It doesn't mean that she's believed to say the maka itself is bleeding. How in the world is she going to know that? She just has to tell us, I have a maka. Can I tell you that it's bleeding right now? I have no idea whether it's bleeding right now, but I know I have a maka. That's all. That's all she has to. That's all the information she has to provide for us. She knows for a fact she has a maka. Whether it's bleeding at the second, we have no clue. That's what the Rashba says. That's good enough to constitute a maka. However, in contrast to the Rashba, which was just a kula, the Hagos Mordechai, and how are we going to find this? How are we going to read this? In the fourth of the Maram Kamos, those who are able to see it. Okay. It's the four lines of the Mordechai, the second column of the Mordechai, first law, the sanya, that menes isha loma maka yeshdi yosef hokob, shemene yosef na mashva, dafka she yotze hadam min hamaka tola. I mean, she has to say much more than the Rashi was saying. She has to tell us that the wound is bleeding. Now, about in Suffolk law, she doesn't know whether the wound is bleeding. She knows she has a mark, she doesn't know it's bleeding. Ain't tola. So that's not going to help. It's not going to be sufficient. So basically, in those two Rishon that we just read, the Rashba and it's Agos Mordechai, it's Agos Maim, Agos Mordechai, there's two fundamentally different approaches to how much certainty must the woman provide us with. According to the Rashba, she just has to tell us that she has a makah. According to the Mordechai and other Rishonim, she has to tell us that she has a makah, that she knows for a fact the makah is bleeding. So these are the two different types of makos that the Rishonim discuss, whether it has to be what we call a makah hayadua shemotidam, or whether even a makah she'eni yadum shemotidam is also sufficient. So the Shulchan Aruch, in the fifth of the Maamar Kavos, when he quotes this sugya of makos, the Shulchan Aruch writes, Imyesh makah ba'osa makom, if she has a makah in that area, tolin b'dama kosa, she can be tola, it's okay, she can rely on the fact that it's alright. So notice what the Shulchan Aruch did not revire. He didn't tell you what kind of makah is tolin that. He didn't say, oh, by the way, the only kind of makah that we're talking about is a makah she'yadua shemotzidam. He quotes the Gemara verbatim, she has a makah, that's good. So that leads us to believe, the Shulchan Aruch is of the opinion, that we could be making one the shayla. If it's a makah, it's a makah. It's all good. It doesn't have to be any specific kind of makah. Any makah will be sufficient. However, the Ramah begins to give us a whole different story. So the Ramah says, "B'chol zeh be'isha she'esh laveses kavua." Says the Ramah, he starts to throw in curveballs at us. He says, "When are we going to be so makil to be told on makas? That's if you have a woman who has a set period, and now she's starting to bleed at the onset part, which is like the fish was referring to." So, but as you chalom litlos shelo b'shas vesta b'makosa, the med v'amurim that you can be told on a makah. That's if it's shelo b'shas vesta. Af a pi she'ein yodas bevadai shemakasa motziadam. Even though she doesn't know that a makah is motziadam, so the Ramah sounds like he was making like the Shulchan Aruch, but he threw a curveball of a chumra at us. He describing a makah she'ein yodas bevadai shemotziadam. He said that's okay, but he threw in another condition. But medvamun, that's okay. That's if the woman has a regular cycle and she's seeing not at the time of the cycle, implying that if she doesn't have this regular cycle, so we're more concerned. So then we're not going to be makel so fast on just what she says she has in makah. So this Shulchan Aruch and Ramah becomes the background to really the next part of the sugya. Next week we're going to try to discuss much more biarichus. What kind of makah? What degree of certainty is necessary to determine this makah? So today, what we try to do, try to define with a little bit of ambiguity is where the makah is. So again, so we saw that according to the simple pshat halacha, it's in the makah itself. And even though it's in the endometrial lining, that was the simple reading of the Chazon Ish. All makahs, no matter where they are, it's a makah, everything's okay. Then we took a step back and said, not so fast. Maybe the makah that Chazal are referring to is not in the lining. Maybe lining blood is always a problem. Maybe the makah is cervical blood. So we had almost a geographic discussion as to where the makah is. Now we're beginning to see, even if we identified the proper location for the makah, how much certainty is necessary in terms of the actual bleeding of this makah. So the Rashba was very, very, very magical. He said, makah, it's a makah, great, don't ask any more questions. Mordechai said, don't ask the questions, ask a lot of questions. Namely, is it really, really bleeding? It's a makah. Theory is a makah. Is it packed that's bleeding right now? And then we saw the Shulchan Aruch who was makil, and the Ramah starts to tell us a lot of factors. There's a shulant, well, it depends, the answer to this question is, depends where she's up to in her cycle. So we have a lot of work to do, hopefully next week, to try to iron out what kind of a makah this is. First using the terminology of the Gemara and Rishon and the Shulchan Aruch, and then trying to plug that into modern-day medicine. What is the modern-day equivalent of some of these terms that are being thrown around in Rishon and the Shulchan Aruch? So next week, we'll try to get to the bulk of this again.
So the Ramah's not really talking about the quality of the makah per se, just like the big picture, like Taliyah kind of thing?
Well, no, the problem is that the Ramah also threw in the end that even though she's not Yadua Shemotzidam, she's not willing to be Mekel, implying that if it is Yadua Shemotzidam, maybe we will be willing to make all the time, even if she has it, doesn't have a set period. So the Ramah just introduced two different factors.